Welcome to the Culture, Faith, and Politics podcast. I'm here once again with Pastor Dave Johnson from Church of the Open Door. My name is Pat Conkey, and we've been talking for the last few weeks about Tim Alberta's book, The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory, American Evangelicals in an Age of Extremism. Today, we're talking about Chapter 3, which is very much about Jerry Falwell Sr., Jerry Falwell Jr., the founding of the Moral Majority, Liberty University, some of the scandals that have come up at Liberty University, and really just some of the principles that went into founding the Moral Majority and that university. And so it's going to be an interesting discussion with Dave. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, good to see you. Good to be back with you.
Yeah. And before we jump into this, though, I actually wanted to address a question or a series of questions and comments that we've received on these videos. It's been really gratifying that people are watching the videos, they're interacting with them, and some are asking questions, some are just saying things, you know. But one of the things that consistently gets said is something along the lines of, why do you guys have such a problem with Donald Trump's morality when Joe Biden is just as bad, or, you know, things along those lines? And I think they're missing the point a little bit. But I think that some of what we've said has maybe led people to think that that this is all about just thinking Donald Trump has a bad character or whatever. Because I think Dave and I both, when we got into first, you know, like when I made the decision to oppose Donald Trump in 2016, a lot of it was about these character issues. And but something much larger than that has come into play in the years since that's really, really gotten me to be outspoken. And the main thing I would say about it is the lies. It's not just, you know, like people can say, well, all politicians lie, but there's something about the MAGA movement that goes much deeper than that. And I feel like it's important to just point that out here in response to some of these questions that we've gotten. The MAGA movement is an authoritarian movement. You know, by definition, it is, if you study authoritarianism. And one of the main weapons or tools that authoritarians are going to use is undermining the very concept of truth. Because it used to be that when an authoritarian wanted to stay in power, they could limit all of the opposing voices, you know, just by not allowing people to speak, shooting somebody who speaks out, or shutting down any alternative media, that sort of thing. But with media everywhere now, especially in America, with access to so much media, the tactic that gets used a lot more by authoritarians is to lie. To create, not just tell small lies here and there, like, you know, a lot of politicians will do, but to create an alternate reality. And this is something Vladimir Putin has just mastered over the years. And a lot of the people like Steve Bannon and others who are part of this MAGA movement are just, they're masters of this sort of thing. Steve Bannon has been very clear about his tactics because he knows that most people are not going to even look into his tactics. You know,
he's very blatant.
He's very outspoken about it.
Deny it, right?
Exactly. Yep. And he has said on numerous occasions that my goal and the goal of our movement is to flood the zone with shit. That's a quote from Steve Bannon.
Because you would never say shit. Right.
I only had to say it because he did.
Because of him. Right. Full of shit. No. Anyway.
Right. But yeah, that's a quote from him. And the point is that the whole nature of this sort of authoritarian communication in this day and age is about so overwhelming the airwaves and so overwhelming the people who are following that they can't even discern between what's true and what's false, and you just sort of give up. And it's easier than to just say, I'm gonna choose to listen to you, and right. I'm not even gonna listen to the opposing viewpoints. And so Donald Trump is like the perfect practitioner of that sort of a tactic. And they found in Donald Trump the perfect person to pull this sort of thing off, because by his nature, he lies constantly. And it's just on a level that you just cannot, with any intellectual honesty, say that, well, he's just like every politician in that they all lie. There's, in my opinion, it's just exponentially more lies, and it's much more of a strategic choice to flood his listeners with falsehood after falsehood after falsehood, to the point where you can't get your head above water and breathe like real oxygen. You're just swimming in it. So, Dave, I'll just let you respond if you think I'm off base with this.
Right. No, I get it. But there are certain words that are triggers for people. Like, he just lies and he lies and he lies. Well, what are the lies? And it's more subtle, I think, than, and yet it's unbelievably brazen. But right. it's more subtle than no, I didn't steal the candy bar. It's just right. This, what you talked about, Pat, was a strategy. And I read you this text before we started recording, and in Proverbs 6, it talks about people who, and their whole way of dealing with life, getting what they want, is pointing the finger. There are those who are, they point the finger. It's not me, it's them. Okay, it's not me. It's the godless them, whoever they are. Mm-hmm. And that's a little side note here. When we start talking about Trump and Biden and who lies more, I don't care. This to me isn't about, I don't even care about Trump. I care about how evangelicals have gone, he's great. Start paying attention.
Because like what I said a couple of weeks ago, and that the pastoral concern that I have for people who choose to listen to that, it becomes very mentally unstable. You know, an entire group of people who are choosing to live in an alternate reality is not, it's not good for people.
No. And we'll talk about that actually, because that's what Russell Moore gets into in the next chapter, I think. Mm-hmm. But this pointing of the finger, this kind of person, Proverbs 6 talks about the winking of the eye, the shifting of the feet. It's not me, it's them. It's not this, it's that. And here's the really scary part. You can get really good at that. You can get really good at pointing the finger. It's not, you can get so good at it. It just, you don't even, and people, if you do it enough, people, I think you must be telling the truth. You wink the eye and you shift the feet and you get so good at it. Jeremiah 5 says that their face is hard as rock. Now, what that means is you can't tell. Face as hard as rock just means by looking at them, I can't, it's just nothing. They got really good at this. Now let's forget about this big mega perspective on evangelicalism and democracy and Trump and Biden. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine being married to somebody whose strategy, they're not even aware that this is a, they didn't take a test and go, well, these are the three things you do. But every way they deal with any conflict in a marriage or a relationship or whatever is to point the finger. It's not me, it's them. It's to wink the eye. You can trust me. It's to shuffle the feet. And pretty soon they get good at it and you can't even tell if they're telling the truth or lying. If you can bring it down to that, it's terrifying. I think that's who we have as president. I think that's who Donald Trump is. I think he's a finger pointer, a foot shifter, an eye winker, and he's gotten really good at it. And even the elect are being deceived, I think. Mm. Evil men and imposters, Paul said to Timothy, who was pastoring in Ephesus, evil men and imposters will grow from bad to worse. And what their job is to deceive. They are being deceived. And when it happens, you just go, well, that could never happen. That's, well, it is happening. I think. Right. I'm sorry. I just went off there.
Yeah. No, that's exactly. Yeah. I agree completely. And that's what I say, the pastoral concern that I have for an entire movement of people who are buying into, like, in order to, like I talked a couple of weeks ago, in order to deal with the cognitive dissonance that that brings about of living in this untruth, you have to make a choice, either to start believing truth again and acting that, or to adjust your character, to adjust your worldview to align with this thing that you want to believe.
Right.
And it, at first it might seem like crazy, but after a while you immerse yourself in it. And what does that do to a person? What does that do to a church? What does that do to a family when people are spending that much time just kind of forcing themselves to believe things that are clearly not true?
Yeah.
And I would just challenge people who say, well, you guys are talking about, you know, Trump like he's different. Yeah, he is. Right. And I would say that the MAGA movement is different from other political movements that have had as much power as this one has in the United States, but not different from movements around the world. Yeah. You can see it all around the world.
And that's scary.
So I just wanted to point that out.
No, and that's scary. Could I add one thing? Going back to this Jeremiah/Proverbs 6 thing, the face is harder than rock. The other thing it says is, though smitten, they are not weakened. Okay, stop right there. Mm. Oh, 2 impeachments, 4 indictments, not weakened. The claims of being a witch hunt and this is politically motivated. No, he broke the law, but doesn't matter. Though smitten, though indicted, though impeached, not weakened, though consumed, not taken correction. We're seeing it in living color.
Sorry. Thank you, Dave. That's great. Yeah. So now let's jump into this chapter 3. And, you know, just in short, chapter 3 of Tim Alberta's book is, like I said, about the Falwells, about Liberty University, about the founding of the moral majority. And rather than take you through step by step this chapter, I just want to really recommend that people read this chapter, because there's so much in here that's about it's very eye opening. One of the things that I found myself thinking is, one principle that has never failed me in life so far is, if I see somebody who is revealing themselves publicly to be kind of a bully or kind of a thug or, you know, a liar, you know, and you see it publicly, these little glimpses of it, it's never turned out that actually behind the scenes they were a really good guy. It's always they're always a lot worse behind the scenes than you thought. Yeah. And this is a chapter that really gets into that, about the Falwells. And I would just recommend reading it, because I don't want to just sit here and just air all of the Falwells' dirty laundry. But I do want to get into with Dave a couple of the key points. Yeah.
But if you want to see the dirty laundry, read the chapter.
Yeah.
Tim Alberta does a great job, and he's not just gratuitously airing dirty laundry.
He's actually pretty careful about it, because I know some of these stories, and he was actually pretty careful in not going into all the tawdry details. He does touch on them. So, so one of the themes, first of all, that I think comes through pretty clearly about the Falwells, and I want to get Dave's input on this, is it seems pretty clear to me that neither of them, Jerry Falwell Sr. nor Jerry Falwell Jr., are particularly motivated by love for Christ. And I know you can't judge somebody's heart, but it's things that they actually said. Like, they're actually pretty clear about that. And Jerry Falwell Jr., it says here, this is a quote from the book, Jerry Jr. went to great lengths to let the world know he was, quote, not a preacher, pastor, or spiritual leader, but that he was a UVA-trained lawyer and businessman. So that's just, that theme comes through with both of these guys. Yeah.
Could I just add one thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think my impression of, just from what I read, of Jerry Falwell Sr. Is that when he entered into ministry, it was about Christ. It was about I mean, he talks about saving souls, yeah. And I do think that was the presenting issue for him. That's what he cared about. There were other things in there as well that I think ultimately overwhelmed.
Right. That's a good way to put it.
As it is, we do that as pastors, is you get your eye off the ball and all of a sudden, when did I lose the reason I even started doing this ministry? Because you're doing anything you can to keep it alive or make it grow. So, but Jerry, you're right.
In fairness, that's a really good point, because Jerry Falwell Sr., I think, did start out, even though he also was very big on like the business thing, let's grow this thing, you know, kind of through,
sure.
you know, a lot of different means. But I think that's a fair assessment to say he took his eye off the ball. Jerry Falwell Jr. never had his eye on the ball, never claimed to have his eye on the ball. He was about something else, always claimed to be about something else. So
it was fascinating, Pat, when Jerry Falwell, where that expose of him and his wife and the pool guy and all that weird stuff, that one of his defenses that he verbally said, he defended himself by saying, I never believed any of this stuff.
Yeah, right.
Well, great. Okay, now we kind of thought that, but thank you for telling us.
Right, right.
You never did believe.
Yeah, you can't call me a hypocrite. I never claimed to be anything but what I am, you know, like that sort of a mindset.
A jerk? I've always been a jerk.
Yeah.
Don't be surprised, but I'm a jerk anyway.
Right, right. So, that theme comes through a lot. And you and I had talked, Dave, about how this concept of, you know, what are you building? You know, whose kingdom are you building? I kind of want to hear your thoughts on that, because this comes through quite a bit in this chapter.
Yeah. Well, Pat, one of the reasons I brought that up, I think he's building his own kingdom, but he's using, you know, the name of God to build his kingdom, is I've seen it before. And it's something you can't tell right away, because, well, I'm not going to go deep into it, but there was a guy here in town, and I kind of came into Open Door when he was coming into his ministry thing in another church in town. And it was a big church. And I just knew the guy. And I'm going, I would just say to people I knew, the guy's building his own kingdom. Mm. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a big church. There's nothing wrong with that. But there was an ego involved. And I could just tell he was building his own kingdom. Ultimately, it did unravel. Mm. And because I think God is light, in him there is no darkness. The movement of God is always to reveal what has been hidden, to shout from the rooftops what has been whispered. And that's what happened to this guy I'm talking about. But I think one of the things that I think can help people discern these kinds of dynamics when they see them is that, okay, I'll just say this phrase I told you earlier. I think sometimes why we do what we do matters at least as much as what we do. So what we're doing is building a really big church and a massive university, state-of-the-art, you know, D1 football team. What's wrong with that? Absolutely nothing. Why you're doing it matters. Mm-hmm. What's really driving that? They had these little slogans at Liberty, building champions for Christ.
Right.
Okay, really? Is that really what we're doing? Here's my illustration that opens up the principle to make you suspicious of what you look at sometimes. And I think we should be, actually, not suspicious, but discerning.
Yeah.
I bring flowers home to my wife. Good. That's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Why?
Undeniably good.
But why? Thing. Right. But why? Even I know that sometimes the reason I brought flowers to my wife is because I thought of her. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a good, honestly. The why was I thought of her, and I just thought, I just want to tell her I love her. Mm-hmm. That's really good. It's a good thing. But the other times I'm bringing flowers home, and I'm trying to get out of something. I'm trying to say, hey, don't pay attention to what just happened or what I just did. Here's some flowers. Everything's fine. Now, the why I gave her flowers was to manipulate her and to blind her to, in fact, when I bring my wife flowers, she goes, what'd you do? She's so suspicious. So you build a big church. What drove it? What was behind the driving of that? Well, it could start out as being God, and all of a sudden it's my ego and my need to be seen and known. And I'm telling you, that creeps in so fast, and it's endemic, pandemic. What is it? It's endemic. All over.
Yeah.
Pat, you were a pastor. You go to pastor's conference.
Mm-hmm.
How big is yours? Church.
Right. Yeah. Right. All the time. How many are you running? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, what? I mean, there's something of my validating me by how massive and big or whatever it is. And that is evident in spades in the story of senior and junior Falwell.
Right.
That's yeah. one thing.
And so, another major theme of this chapter, it's just, I think it's really obvious just from the outside, but it's good that the chapter talked about, is how so much of what they're doing is building the Republican Party. Like, I mean, that it's just a major, you know, and one of my first experiences with Jerry Falwell Jr., because again, I was like, when I was a pastor, you know, for those 20 years, like I've talked about, I didn't really follow the political news at all. I was forcing myself not to. And, but I was actually, I had a thing happen where a guy one day, this was during the 2015. It was during the primaries, I think still, a guy at my church confronted me in a very threatening way about how I needed to get in line and start telling the truth about what's going on in the culture and stuff. And it sort of blindsided me, because that didn't happen very much at all in my church, but it did happen. Mm. In this case, he's a bigger guy than me. And it was this, like, he was trying to physically intimidate me by squeezing my hand. This was after a sermon that I gave, and kind of towering over me, and he wouldn't let go. And he was saying, you need to start preaching the truth, and I'm going to be watching you, and you need to talk about what's going on in this culture.
What was the truth, Pat? Well, what was the truth you weren't telling?
The things that he brought up were some of these political, social type issues, you know. And and again, it sort of blindsided me, because we weren't like that at my church. We just didn't. That wasn't something. And clearly it was bothering him. And so my response to that, and it wasn't that I was doing this at him, but it just so happened that that next week, Jerry Falwell Jr. gave this big sermon at Liberty University to his students, and it kind of went viral, some of the quotes from it. But one of them was, he was telling them that he wanted them all to get handgun certifications, and he was saying, "I'm packing right now. I'm not going to pull it out, but I'm packing right now." And he said, and I'll tell you what, if those Muslims try coming around here, you know, we're going to be ready for them. Some statement like that.
We'll meet him at the door.
Yeah. I mean, it was a horrific thing to be said from the pulpit at their chapel, which is this huge stadium. And
there's two things that statement was. It was an ignorant statement and an arrogant statement. Put arrogant and ignorant together. Boom.
Right.
Really bad. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's perfect. So that happened that week, right after I had been threatened, you know, to talk about these issues, and he was going to keep his eye on me, this congregate and stuff. And I think I had just had enough. So it wasn't that this was directed at him. Well, it sort of was, but it was more directed at the issue. I thought, I need to address, if this is in my congregation, I need to address it. So the next Sunday, I actually ran that clip, and I never did this sort of political stuff at church, but I actually played that clip of Jerry Falwell Jr. saying that. So this is 2015, I think, when this happened. And I played the clip, and then I stopped it, and I said, just so everyone's clear, that is not Christianity. There's nothing Christian about that. There's nothing gospel about that. You know, this is, you know, whatever else I said, but I could not have been more clear, you know, and because I thought, if people are listening to this sort of thing, they need to hear. And I didn't even feel like I was making a political statement. It was more like this.
Could I comment on that?
Yeah.
It wasn't a political statement.
Right.
If you had shown a clip of the president or some political figure saying that, it might have been political.
Yeah.
And this is my whole concern with everything we're talking about.
Right.
Yes, I care if we continue to be a democracy, but I'm not I don't care about Joe Biden. I don't care about Trump. Right. Yes, they all lie, blah, blah, blah. I care when Donald Trump Jr., this is a weird example, mm-hmm. says to a conference full of evangelicals that the way of Jesus has gotten us nothing, and everybody cheers. Mm-hmm. I'm not offended at all that Donald Trump Jr. thinks the way of Jesus doesn't work and we should quit mm-hmm. playing softball and start playing hardball, because that's what I expect of him.
Right.
What destroys me and creates incredible sadness is the 2,000 evangelicals stood up and applauded
them. Right, exactly.
And that's what I was reacted to with you, Pat, with I don't care who says that thing about we're going to stop the Muslims at the door with guns. I don't care if Joe Blow says it. That's what I expect from the world. Mm-hmm. But Jerry Falwell Jr. is representing what we have called in the past evangelical, and that bugs me.
Right.
That needs to be confronted.
Right.
I agree with that.
Yeah, and another example of that from this week is, you know, it's been now for months, Donald Trump has been out there saying, they're not indicting me. They're indicting you. I've been indicted for you, you know, which is very clearly, like I've been saying, he's clearly trying to take on this role of, you know, the sacrificial lamb, you know.
This is Proverbs 6.
Yeah. Yep. So it's like, I go, okay, that's Donald Trump. That's what he does. What's heartbreaking is I watched a clip from NBC News this week where they're talking to Iowa, you know, voters, Republican voters that are, you know, talking about who you're going to vote for and stuff. And there's this couple and the guy says some of the stuff you would expect. And then the wife says, and they've indicted him and they've indicted him on my behalf in the same way that Jesus went to the cross and died for me. Donald Trump is mm-hmm. being indicted for me. And I heard that mm-hmm. and I thought, it's mm-hmm. exactly that person needs a pastor and that person needs mm. somebody to help sort these things out because she's being hit constantly with these messages. And if pastors don't say, hey, can I sit with you and help sort this out without being accused yeah. of being political? You know what I'm saying? Because yeah. I guarantee that she has never, for instance, paid off a porn star. You know, he wasn't being indicted because she paid off a porn star and tried to hide it. He was being indicted because he did. She did not try to overthrow democracy. Donald yeah. Trump did. He was indicted for that. It's very different from saying, I've sinned, Christ took my sins. But, you know, but without having a pastor to sit and actually talk through some of these things or to preach it or whatever, people are just sort of vulnerable to this. And so Jerry Falwell Jr. is just one example of this sort of thing happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the word pastor is kind of pastoral mm-hmm. and it actually connects with shepherd.
Right.
And she needed a shepherd. And the reason is because she's a sheep. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I'm a sheep too.
Yeah. We're all sheep.
Yes. And, but like, wow. Sometimes sheep lose their way because they're like, some sheep go, bah, I hate the shepherd. Bah, I'm mm-hmm. leaving. Okay. That's the prodigal son. Mm-hmm. You know, I hate the father, mm-hmm. I hate God, I'm leaving. Most sheep get lost because they smelled something. Oh, that smells good, and they follow it. Mm-hmm. And I just think people have followed the wrong shepherd. But here, Jesus said something that, and this bugs me relative to the kind of person you just talked about. Mm-hmm. Jesus said, my sheep hear my voice and they know me. So what voice are you listening to?
Right, right.
We have people who've been seduced by voices, other voices than the voice of Jesus that we hear in the Bible, and they don't even know it. Right. And it's frightening.
Right.
God bless them. If I had that lady in my church and she said that to me, mm-hmm. I would be able to deal with, I would sit her down and we would talk. I hope. I mm-hmm. hope we would. It didn't show just show up on Facebook, but there's some sort of connection where you could go, okay, let's talk about that and begin to talk to them the way you just did, Pat, mm-hmm. about unpacking that. And did you even hear what you said? Because right. that's blasphemy.
Right, right. And I think if she were able to step back from it a little bit, she would say, mm-hmm. Kind of wish I hadn't said that. You know, she'd, you know what I mean? But And the reason I bring this up again is because it's not just that I think Christians are sort of here and there falling into this or that thing by accident. And you can, it's my whole point is there's a concerted effort, and the Falwells, especially in recent years, Jerry Falwell Jr. played a huge role in this concerted effort to capture the minds of Christians. I don't think Jerry Falwell Jr. has a sincere bone in his body about Christianity. I think he's been pretty clear about that with his own words. And he's using it as a means of gaining power. And so this woman that I just talked about is an example of one of, I think, millions of people who aren't accidentally falling into these things. There's a concerted effort to capture their minds and hearts. Yeah. And that's why I'm saying things. That's why I'm saying what I'm saying.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, Donald Trump Jr., I mean, Jerry Falwell Jr., he was a big supporter of Trump's in the beginning.
Yeah.
But in that chapter, this isn't necessarily about his support of Trump, mm-hmm. though it's in there. It's what became the scandals at that school, the cover-ups of sexual abuse at that school, the financial, maybe things that were illegal. I can't remember all the details. But this goes back, and that's Jerry Jr., but this goes back to Jerry Sr. And it's one of the ways I think you can spot someone who's building their own kingdom. Mm-hmm. One is you got to ask, why are they doing that, what they're doing? But also, Falwell Sr. was not driven by principle. Mm. And what I mean by that is that when the moral majority was first beginning, his big issue was integration in the schools. He didn't want integration. Yeah. Maybe.
Can I read that quote?
I was going to ask you to read that.
Yeah, there's one quote that I wanted to pull out. So this is a quote from the book. And Tim Alberta writes, in truth, Falwell had never been apolitical. Back in 1958, just his second year of pastoring, Falwell denounced the Brown versus Board of Education Supreme Court decision of 1954, saying, quote, the devil himself was pushing integration and that, quote, the true Negro did not want it. What will integration of the races do to us? Falwell asked his all-white congregation. It will destroy our race eventually. As the years went on, Falwell was selective but hardly silent with his partisan punditry. He aligned himself with Senator Joe McCarthy, alerting his flock to the risks of communist infiltration. He chastised Martin Luther King Jr. for having, quote, left-wing associations. So, yeah, that was the quote I wanted to read about this.
Yeah, and the thing that I would want to give into people's hands as a tool to spot this stuff is that most people don't know that what drove Falwell's energy to form the moral majority was his resistance to integration.
Right.
In fact, his big thing was he was really upset, and he was very connected to Bob Jones University, mm-hmm. and they were going to lose their tax-exempt status. Oh, by the way, the government's coming for you. They're coming for you. You're going to lose your tax. So generate fear.
Right.
But it was all about this racial stuff. Incredibly racist. That thing you read was unbelievably so.
Right.
But integration and his opposition to integration was his big thing, but he couldn't get traction.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't get the movement. And this is what I mean by driven by principle. Abortion in the 70s, abortion was seen by evangelicals as a Catholic issue.
Right.
It wasn't our. He picked up abortion as being the, this is what we're going to be against.
Mm-hmm.
Not because he believed that. In fact, A.W. Criswell, even Falwell, they had this idea of Criswell said he was a famous First Baptist pastor church.
Right.
I remember hearing his name when I was a kid. He was like this guy we all revered. That integration was like what Falwell said. It was going to destroy the race and all that kind of stuff. Oh, no. What I was going to say about Criswell was that they believed that life and the soul entered a body when it was born. So abortion before birth, not an issue. Mm. Now they all change that. Part of it was like authentically over time. You can right. change your mind.
Yeah, right.
But at the beginning, the picking up of abortion as the moral majority's cause was because that's what will draw followers right. and money. And that's the trumpet he started blowing. And I'm against abortion too, but you can spot this false leadership. And what turns into actually spiritual abuse mm. is when you have somebody, after you scratch, they're not, what the reason they're making the decisions they're making is not because they're not being driven by principle. They're not being driven by, it's the right thing to do, and I don't care if everybody leaves, I'm doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. They don't think like that.
Right. Anyway. Right. Yeah. So so that I just think it's important to point that out about the founding of the moral majority. And, again, it's not like we want to be careful, I think, both of us, when we talk about this. The issue of race is you know, you can't oversimplify these things and say, oh, the moral majority was founded in racism or whatever. But it's important to understand that this is part of the history of this. And you see it play out in different ways over the years as you study this stuff. Another thing, and I don't want to go too in depth here and make this too long, because I want people to read the chapter because I think it's worth reading. But there were a couple other things that we've already alluded to. One being the sex scandals, but the other one is just some financial scandals that happened at Liberty University, and that were mostly allowed to go on until it just became untenable, where it became just so public. And especially when Jerry Falwell Jr. had the sex scandal, then some of these other scandals were all of a sudden not acceptable any longer. But is there anything you want to say on that, Dave, or just have people read
Well, no, they can read it. I'm not going to get into the details, but I think every one of these things have, there it is again. You can, when you see systems like this, mm-hmm. where they're building their own kingdom, you're going to have this. But at Liberty, they had an honor code. And it was like, it reminds me of growing up in this fundamental church I grew up in, where you didn't smoke, you didn't chew, you didn't go with girls who do. My dad thought that was hysterical. Right. So I heard that a lot. But there was no dancing, playing cards, no drinking. You couldn't ever do a date even alone. So there was this honor code. And you had to sign off on that at Liberty. And that looks really, wow, I love it. I'm going to send my kids there, because it's all about what they didn't do. Holiness was defined in what we didn't do. Mm-hmm. But what that honor code did was it created something. Maybe they didn't expect this. Women in particular were coming forward with abusive sexual being sexually abused
right.
by faculty and other students. And they wouldn't ever deal with that, in part. And some people didn't come forward till later, because for them to say I was sexually abused, or I was somehow I was raped.
Yeah.
Well, you have sex, that means you broke the honor code. And so right. It was incredible where at this school that was all about looking holy, because we don't do these things, would do these massive cover-ups and totally ignore illegal. You go to jail for right. raping people.
Right.
Not just kicked out of school.
Yeah.
And so covering that up is just like.
Yeah. A lot of talk about you put yourself in this position. What were you doing to put yourself into this position where you were alone with this person? That was breaking the rule, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's your fault, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So that it's worth reading, just to read about it. I wanted to end, though, here where Tim Alberta ends, where he's basically the chapter begins with him talking to a guy named Doug Olson, who was there from the beginning at Liberty. And then the chapter ends with him talking to Doug Olson's son, Nick. And Nick is now, at the time of this writing, a professor at Liberty University, but he's seeing all of these things and having a lot of issues with it, and deciding whether to speak out, whether to remain as a professor there, that sort of thing. And, you know, the way that he ends it is he says Olson worried about all of this. Still, he told me, he worried even more about something else. Quote, I have to wonder if my unwillingness to challenge the family business of liberty is because of my own family. I want to protect my wife and kids, provide for them, keep them comfortable. But in prioritizing those things and keeping quiet to protect the family, so to speak, am I doing the very thing liberty has done all along? And Alberta writes, this comparison, liberty as a mafia, the Falwells as ruthless dons, was so provocative that Olson looked surprised with himself for having invited it, which I just think, it's got to, when you realize I'm in this system, that's just very much an abusive system. Yeah.
And one of the characteristics of being in a system like that, when you're like this guy, mm-hmm. is you smell it, but you keep pushing it away and you think you're crazy.
Yeah.
This can't be, it can't be. Oh no, it can't be. It takes it. That's part of the abuse.
Right.
That you actually, it exploits actually really good people.
Right. Right. Exactly.
They don't want to think the worst. They want to think the best.
Right.
And they're really easy to.
Yeah. And so that I think is like, if I, you know, again, when I keep talking about why am I speaking out about this? Why do I go public with talking about my concerns about the MAGA movement and Trumpism and all that, is because I think it's a system like that. It's you look at it, it's at every level of the system. So within churches, I just know so many people who've had to leave their churches because they were unwelcome because they dared to speak out against some of these things. And it's, so there's that abusive system right there where it's like, no, you protect the leader. I'm talking about even politically, or, you know, to share an unpopular opinion. It's like, it's become very much about protecting Donald Trump, protecting the party that's fighting for our values and all that kind of stuff. But all the way up through the top, where the people that we would hope would be protecting us from it, who are elected to do it, from Trump's party or the MAGA party, I think there's still good ones there, but they're in this kind of system where it's like they've got to figure out how to navigate. How do I speak without getting, you know, defenestrated? It's like it's that abusive kind of a system. And what I want is to not see our churches align ourselves with that, because then you start seeing those same tactics in our churches. If you see the tactics that are used at Liberty University to silence people, to keep people from speaking out or questioning the authorities and stuff, the more that we accept that, the more that we, by our silence, say that that's acceptable, the more it's going to happen, and the more it's going to shape the Christian church. It's like this just, it can't be tolerated. It needs to be opposed when we see this sort of abusive structure that I think Tim Alberta outlines really clearly in this chapter about Liberty University.
Yep.
All right. So with that, thank you, Dave. And
you bet.
We'll do this again in a few days, where we're going to get into chapter 4, which is about Russell Moore. And it's another great chapter. And the nice thing about this is it's a chapter about somebody that I have a lot of respect for. And we need to see this. We need to see role models. We need to see people who are trying to figure out how to be helpful and constructive in the midst of some of these difficult things. So this chapter on Russell Moore is going to be great next time. So thanks, Dave.
Yep.
Talk to you soon.
You bet, Pat.
All right.
You bet.